This is The Good Die Young, the podcast where we deep dive into the greatest television you barely saw. I'm your host, Les Weiler. Join me as I take you through what made these shows too pretty to live. This is The Good Die Young. Season 1, The Middleman. Hey, it's Les from The Good Die Young. This week, I'm thrilled to bring you my interview with composer Tree Adams. His music on Middleman made an already spectacular show legendary. Currently, he's on NCIS New Orleans, and we had a great time chatting. I hope you enjoy.
Hello.
Hey, thank you so much for doing the interview.
Happy to chat with you, Les.
So the show that we're doing is called The Good Die Young, and we're doing kind of deep dives into one season gone too soon shows. You've done such an amazing range of work. 10 years on, what stands out to you about working on The Middleman?
Well, it was one of the best, you know, one of the best projects I ever worked on. I mean, Javier Grillo Marxwatch, creator, he's one of those brilliant minds. Every character name, every like little detail in there is some reference to, you know, some historical like sci-fi thing. He's just got this incredible well of fan knowledge, you know, like he himself is a fan of knowledge of the genre. And he wanted to explore all kinds of things musically, you know. So if we had, for instance, you know, these luchador, you know, wrestlers, he would want to do like mariachi stuff. If we had, you know, sort of creature from the Black Lagoon type things, he'd want to do, you know, sci-fi, like a retro sci-fi thing, or zombies. You know, we had, you know, haunted sort of ghost puppet stuff. We had like almost like a Star Wars kind of thing with, you know, holograms. So he wanted to allude to some of those John Williams scores. He kept wanting to bring in flavors from the entire universe of, you know, horror, sci-fi, adventure. It was just the most wild kind of potpourri of different spice from, you know, all of the different things that we've all watched over the years. Kind of an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's part of what makes that show so rewatchable.
Yeah, I agree. But I think he was aware of the fact that the show was sort of casting about in all these different genres, and so he was real keen on us having something to unify it. So we had some themes, you know. So we had the kind of heroic middleman theme that we would rehash in all different instruments. We had sort of like a headquarters theme with, you know, the middleman dub dubs. You know, we had a certain romantic theme that would come up, you know, in different with different instrumentation. So I think even though we were kind of like cruising all over these different genres, because we had some melodies, it kept us anchored a little bit, which was smart on his part.
One of the things that fascinates me about the show is the depth of the music. I was just watching the Mexican Wrestler episode, and I was struck by how rich the score is during the fight scene, when I feel like a lot of shows might have tried to get away with not having music or as much score there. And so it made me want to ask, you know, how much was Javi trying to get those musical influences there? Because you nail some Esquivel sounds on some Space Age Bachelor Pad stuff. And then you've got songs like Palomino that are so perfect for Middleman.
Sure.
But it all feels of a universe.
Well, you know, I mean, we had a little bit of a palette, you know what I mean? We did kind of go genre hopping, as it were, but we did try and keep, you know, at least some of the same, you know, shaker sounds and horn sounds and string sounds, you know. I think for, you know, each episode would have like its signature thing that we were kind of pulling into it, you know, like the one you were referring to. He was really big on whip cracks. He was like, I want to hear whip cracks all over the score. I was like, all right. You know, and we're doing all kinds of like yodeling and just crazy textures in there. It was a really fun time.
Was there any particularly tough piece to crack or tough episode to get the feel right that you wanted?
I mean, maybe the ghosts sort of what they're like, cheerleaders, like a sorority house.
Yeah, the Panhellenic, the sorority ghosts. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like the one that to me was like a little bit like outside, you know, where we were going. But yeah, we found it, you know, in the end. I mean, it was just coming up with like something creepy that kind of worked. Some high Celeste, you know, mallet stuff. Yeah, it was cool. That was probably one of the more challenging ones, though.
I know that you, before moving into composing, spent years on the road in bands. I'm based out of Austin, Texas. Any particular favorite place that you've ever played here?
Yeah, I mean, there was Steamboat, and maybe, was it called Liberty Lunch back then?
Yep. Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day. I don't know what it is now, but it's hard to keep up, you know, the names of these clubs, they change. But I love playing in Austin. I mean, great people down there, a lot of really good musicians. I'm trying to remember who we played with when we were down there. We had some where we were the opening band, some where we were the headliner. I remember there was this band, the Billy White Trio. We played with them a little bit. There was this band, it was a funky band. I forgot what they were called. Drummer's name was Frosty. Anyway, yeah, we had a lot of good time playing down there. And I do love the food.
You've got another band going now, right? The Howling Volts?
Yeah. We still do stuff from time to time. That one's with an old friend of mine from nursery school. Our friend Chris Scully. He and I, yeah, we met when we were 3 and 4 years old, respectively. And so here a few years later, we started a little band, and we do some stuff here with the Howling Volts. And then, you know, he's in New York and I'm in Los Angeles, so that doesn't happen that often. And then I'll do gigs, you know, as the Tree Adams Band, just, you know, around town, you know, with the horn sections, funky groove stuff. And
I was reading through a little preview of Dusk Riders, your graphic novel that you released a soundtrack for, and I love the soundtrack that came with it.
Thank you.
It's heavier than I'd expected when it opens, almost like Clutch. And so, yeah, I was really enjoying that. I didn't know what particularly inspired you to move into graphic novel and to also pair a soundtrack with it.
Well, I mean, part of it was working on The Mill, man. I mean, I think it was about 8 years ago that I started working on it. I had been doing, you know, I had done the show Californication and was getting hired to do scores similar to it, like all these kind of guitar scores that were basically where I had to knock myself off. And I was getting kind of bored with that sound. You know, I had this opportunity to do The Middleman. I remember which was based on Javi's graphic novel, and I had always been a fan of graphic novels. I sort of dove back into that world a bit. I thought to myself, it'd be cool to like come up with a story that I'd like to write music for. So I basically came up with this idea of this sort of dystopian world, this little freedom force, you know, these freedom fighters, these three that are sort of led by this, you know, really strong female character that are sort of fighting for Earth's autonomy. You know, the idea is this guy Percival is this bad guy. He's a corporate warlord, and he's kind of, you know, organized the colonization of a distant planet, basically, you know, moved all the rich people there and turned Earth into a service planet. You know, there's this organism that they've discovered called the Ravaran that can create like a renewable energy source, and he's also captured that. And the team is trying to get the Ravaran back so they can restore Earth's autonomy. And as they get closer to Percival, they kind of discover some dark secrets there, and hijinks ensues. Anyway, that's the idea of this thing, the world, and it's kind of gritty, and it's got, you know, a little bit of a sci-fi thing to it, and there's, you know, a little bit of a fantasy component to it. So I wanted to write music for something like this because I thought it would be kind of larger in scope, a little more cinematic, and it would also have some kind of a gritty underbelly. So I started writing songs, and I started writing score. And 8 years later, I had, you know, finally gotten the thing illustrated and released the CD, and there we are.
I know you work on multiple projects at once, just by necessity of being busy. How do you come back to center? Do you have a palate cleansing ritual or music you listen to kind of get out of a Californication mode and into a different show?
I listen to blues, basically. When I'm not writing music, I listen to blues. I like, you know, pretty much all the sort of Chicago blues, from like Muddy Waters on down to like all the kind of more kind of acoustic, like Mississippi oriented blues, and its offshoots like Sonny Terry and Brown McGee, you know, Sun House or whatever you got. I just kind of something about the blues soothes me, and it's kind of like it just feels like home. So yeah, that's kind of it. You know, I mean, a little bit of jazz too. You know, classic kind of straight ahead bebop jazz. But that's kind of where. That's when I'm not writing music, you know. And nowadays, when I write music, it's pretty all over the place. You know, I mean, I do a lot of, like, orchestral and battle stuff. I'm doing this show, NCIS New Orleans now, which is, like, all this New Orleans stuff. It's kind of all over the place.
I was at the Austin Television Fest this past year, and one of the musical directors for the show, Nashville, talked about the difficulty of just writing a song, just, hey, go out and write a great song about anything, versus having some parameters from a show of like, well, this song's going to need to be a motif we can reuse later, that we can slow down, or that can blend with this, or can, where's your sweet spot on input that you like and your role in collaborating on a show?
Well, I've done it every which way, you know. I mean, I'm happy to be completely left alone. I'm also happy to, you know, like if somebody specifically wants to organize everything and direct every little bit of it, that works too. I mean, you just kind of have to approach it when it's for a project, a specific show. You have to approach it like, hey, you know, I'm a chef. I'm making someone's dinner. You know, this is the applied arts. It's not my record, you know, and as long as you go in with that attitude, you know, if somebody says, hey, you know, like, I don't eat butter. Could you make this with olive oil? I'm like, yeah, man, we got it. Olive oil it is. Like, I don't care. I recently did a song for the first episode of NCIS New Orleans, and we recorded it down in New Orleans. You know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, I showed them an idea, and Scott Batchelor was starting the show. He was like, okay, this is cool. What if, you know, this is the chorus instead of this, and what if, you know, we do 8 bars over here, and then we go to the chorus for this, and then you play a lick here, and, you know, like, he took all the elements I gave him, like a jigsaw puzzle, and kind of moved it all around, and it was great. You know, I was like, you know what, dude, you have a vision for how you want the scene to be shot, and how it all to go down, let's do it. And we went down there and recorded it with George Porter from the Meters, and Cyril Neville and Ivan Neville on the keys. And I mean, it was a real cool band, a real cool sound. And I had the time of my life, and you know, everybody was happy.
That's amazing. That sounds like an amazing session.
Yeah, it was super cool.
I've wanted to ask on a particular song on Palomino, was that something that you wrote for the show, or was that something that you already had that just fit that well?
Can't remember, honestly. I know it was featured in the show. I cannot remember whether it was something I owned and had already done or was done for. I can't remember, honestly.
Because it fits so beautifully. One of the things that I love on the show that I've discussed with friends is that there's a running gag of Noser being this phenomenal musician that you never see play.
Right.
You know, he sits with the guitar. Even when they do Stump the Band, the entire game is that he just looks down at a, you know, couple of chord changes and goes, yeah, I know that song.
Yeah.
Was there ever any discussion of doing some of Tyler's album or a song of Noser's at some point?
I think maybe, wasn't there a moment where Noser did some wicked guitar thing? I feel like there was, like maybe in the finale. I can't remember. I think maybe he did like a flourish or something, and they had me, they had me do something like, it was either like a flamenco thing or like a Hendrix kind of thing. I can't remember what it was, but they had me do something kind of pyrotechnic for one moment for Noser. I think that did happen. I think there was like a one little flash. This is where we need Javi to kind of.
I'll be talking to him soon. I'll have to bother him about it.
Yeah, he'll know.
Man, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Your music has been the background of so many shows, the score for the 100, your stuff on Californication, and of course, all of the music on The Middleman, which has to be one of my favorite rewatchable shows. Obviously, I'm doing a deep dive podcast about it, but I can't thank you enough for your time.
Thanks, Wes. It's been fun chatting.
I'll have a great rest of your day.
You too.
The Good Die Young is an independently run podcast produced by Les Weiler and hosted as part of the Permanent Record Network. We can be found on the web at thegooddieyoungtv.com. Les can be found doing weekly television commentary at www.thetvdudes.com. Thanks for listening.